Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the classic gaming supplements of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Now, if you're a regular listener of the show, and if you're not, I'm not sure this is the best first episode for you, you'll know that I recently finished up Season 1, in which I read my way from start to finish the 1977 Advanced Dungeons & Dragons First Edition Monster Manual. And I promised that between Season 1 and Season 2, in which we tackle the Fiend Folio, I was going to take a little bit of a break and record some special episodes. And that's why, again, if you're a regular listener, you may notice that my voice sounds a little funny. That is because I'm recording outdoors. That's right. I am here at the Cambridge Beer Festival. It's a sunny May afternoon. I'm sitting beneath the shade of a spreading oak. And if it's not an oak, I don't want to hear about it. I don't know a lot about trees. And I have at hand a refreshing beverage. And once I record this, I'm going to go get some lunch. So I apologize if you hear the wind blowing across my mic, people chatting in the background, the sounds of dogs barking, traffic going past, and so on. I've tested it out, and it seems pretty quiet, but you never know. Hi, it's your pal James from the future. I just realized I finished recording this episode, but I didn't do the most important thing. I've got to thank a new Patreon supporter. So thank you very much, Angus, for supporting the show. So, as I said, I didn't know what I was going to cover, and I came up with the idea of looking at a few kind of ancillary articles that expand on some of the stuff that we talked about in Season 1, and also a game that meant a great deal to me when I was younger, and I suppose still does. I'm referring, of course, to Tunnels and Trolls. Now, Tunnels and Trolls is, in fact, the first fantasy role-playing game that I ever played. I played it at camp when I was a kid, and I wanted to go and buy it, and I got my parents to take me to the game store, but they didn't have a copy. So instead I bought the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles role-playing game, which replaced this sometime around like 1986 or 1987, something like that. I don't want to absolutely swear to it. But anyway, I was only a little one. And then that year for Christmas, my parents got me Tunnels and Trolls, and that was the box set that came with a couple of scenarios and some, there was a solo adventure. Tunnels and Trolls is very big on solo adventures, and the little digest-sized paperback rulebook. And I had, at one point, I would have been able to tell you what edition this is, but now I actually do not know. Anyway, it is a red paperback with a cover by Josh Kirby, and it is heavily reinforced with tape, because this is, in fact, the same book that I've had ever since I was a young one, and at some point I was worried that the cover was fraying, so I covered it in tape. It is now more tape than cover. One of the reasons that I wanted to talk about Tunnels and Trolls today is because of how very different its approach to cataloging monsters is than the Monster Manuals. The cover of this edition of Tunnels and Trolls proclaims that it is the complete fantasy game. And this was very much seen as one of the selling points of Tunnels and Trolls. That is to say that it's much simpler than Dungeons and Dragons. Combat is very simple. Character creation is extremely simple. You can easily fit a character on an index card, and that's what they advise you do. It only uses six-sided dice, so it has the dice that you can get out of your Monopoly set or whatever. So it's very accessible in that way. It is the simple budget alternative to D&D, and I think it very much arose from, and someone can correct me, I'm sure, but I think Ken St. Andre, you know, played D&D and was like, well, I don't like these rules, and I don't, you know, find, like, who's got these fancy dice, not me. But the idea of adventuring in underground mazes and fighting monsters is super interesting. So let's make a game that has the same basic concept as D&D and a few similar mechanical things, but is otherwise, you know, totally different. And I think it says a lot about what people consider the core elements of the game to be, if you take my meaning. If you haven't read Tunnels and Trolls, one of the earlier editions, I believe that the most recent edition is quite different, but I'm not sure. But if you haven't read one of the editions from the 70s or 80s, I really do recommend that you do. You can go and get the first edition on DriveThruRPG. It's just like typed, you know, pages that that were created, you know, very shortly after Dungeons and Dragons. And it's absolutely fascinating reading. I really do recommend it. I'll put a link in the description for this episode. But so I'm opening up to chapter 1.6, Creating Monsters, and I want to just read the introduction to this chapter. Having good guys without bad guys would be pretty dull stuff. What lurks and slithers in your imagination, I don't know. But in mine, there are fire-breathing dragons, crocodiles, unicorns, snarks, sharks, and boojums, black hobbits, giant spiders, cave lions, pythons, centaurs, toothy non-flaming dragons, wyverns, worms, griffins, hippogriffs, werewolves, and vampires, balrogs, basilisks, ghosts, jub-jub birds, slithy toves, cave bears, sphinx, enchanted warriors, zombies, reptile men, flame fiends, harpies, orcs, ogres, gremlins, goblins, trolls, giants, two-headed giants, three-headed giants, mushroom monsters, cockatrices, giant slugs, banshees, mummies, barrowites, living statues, shoggoths, wraiths, demons, leopards, octopi, parentheses, giant economy size, close parentheses, Gnolls, Minotaurs, Slime Mutants, Drooling Maniacs, Half-Orcs, Hydra, Living Skeletons, Bandersnatchy, Jabberwocks, Pithecanthropi, Ghouls, Mad Dogs, Poisonous Vipers, Blood Rats, Nikons, Lamiag, Cannibals, Witches, Warlocks, Rabid Rats, parentheses, Ulcios, close parentheses, Chimerae, Hags, Giant Slimy Worms, Yeti Tigers, Gorgons, Bigfoots, Invisible Stalkers, Rare Creatures of all varieties, Misanthropes and Misogynists, Manticores, and lots more. If you want more, look through books of mythologies of ancient cultures or books of science fiction and heroic fantasy. In no time at all, you will be inventing your own, too. Although there are several ways to give greater personalization to your monsters, your average dungeon monster is described most easily by a monster rating. And a monster rating is the only stat that a monster has in Tunnels and Trolls. Really fascinating system. You basically just have a total number, which is basically your hit points, and then divided by 10, it gives you the number of dice your monster rolls in combat, or divided by 10 and adding 1, actually, because there's a minimum level of 1. And that's it. All monsters are effectively mechanically identical. As your hit points go down, you actually get weaker, which is a fun feature. But other than that, there's not a lot of individualization. And in fact, here on page 37, he actually says, Steve McAllister and Jim Bear Peters have developed a formula and chart to create more personalized monsters, especially anthropomorphic ones. This is included in section 2.41, Personalizing Monsters, along with other comments on personalized monsters. And then the next page gives you a list of different types of monsters, the level of the dungeon on which they might be found, and how they get stronger as they go down. So apparently, as you get to level 6 of your dungeon, you know, you're going to get tougher leopards. You know, only weenie leopards on the upper levels. And on the list, which is, again, just one paperback-sized page, you got Balrogs, Black Hobbits, Centaurs, Dragons, with and without flame, Flame Demons, Ghouls, Goblins, Giant Spiders, Half-Orcs, Jub-Jub Birds, Leopards, Ogres, Orcs, Rats, Tigers, Trolls, Unicorns, Vampires, and Werewolves. And then he says, in addition, several of these monsters have special powers that don't show up in the regular MR. Notably, Vampires, Aversion to Holy Objects, Werewolves, susceptibility to silver weapons, and dragons like flight and fiery breath. And he suggests that weaker monsters tend to travel in groups. Okay, well, that all makes perfect sense. That monster section's 3 pages long. It's one page of an introduction, basically one page explaining how monster rating works, and one page giving a list of sample monsters, and that is straight up it. If we flip forward to section 2.41, we get a more complex system. Actually, 2.4 has stuff about monsters and how they react to humans. 2.41 says, like, well, you might want to, not have monsters who enter a death spiral. You might want to have monsters that are basically more like player characters in terms of their abilities, and give them assign them stats. And actually, a really interesting point about charisma, and he says, charisma for monsters is negative. This doesn't mean that a dragon with a charisma of negative 50 is ugly, only that his way of looking at things isn't at all the same as a human being's. He's just as beautiful or impressive as a human with a charisma of 50. Whether you're ugly or impressive depends on how close to zero a being's charisma is. So the idea is that, monsters have negative charisma. It basically represents how terrifying they are, rather than how likable and charming they are. Which is a good idea on the one hand. On the other hand, it does mean that player characters aren't terrifying, which is, they might be. And it further says, you can arm them with weapons and armor, just like a human, see the weapons table, which is a lot bigger than the monster table. Don't let the chart limit you. There are lots of other monsters that have roved the imaginations of people around the world, and it may increase your enjoyment of the game to include a Cataplipus, a Stone Toad, an Unai, or a Sapient Zat. To boggle your friends, for that matter, invent your own. As GM, your powers are unlimited. So even this detailed section, plus the following section, 2.42, Wandering Monsters, is still only a grand total of 7 pages, and that includes a full-page illustration. So that is a total for 10 pages. And, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, this is the complete fantasy game. It's got a total of 10 pages of monsters. It's only, excluding ads and blank character cards, 186 pages long, and the cover price on this issue is £2.95. Hang on one second while I figure out how much £2.95 in 1986 is worth today. All right, well, having checked my completely scientific sources on the internet, I have determined that £2.95 in 1986 would be worth £6.04 in the year 2018. I'm not so sure that's 100% true, but let's take the price of an average paperback book. And what's a paperback book like? Like a little one, like 9 pounds, 8, 9 pounds, something like that? I don't really know. I buy all my books secondhand. But let's say 9 pounds. Or in U.S. dollars, that's what? About 15 or $16. Tunnels of Trolls advertises itself as the complete fantasy game, and it's not kidding. You know, you got character creation, you got variant rules, you got guns and stuff, you got a huge section on weapons, which I poured over as a kid, much more so than the monster section. You got a sample solo scenario, you got rules on creating dungeons, you got extended examples of combat, you got a long spell list. It's got the whole bit. What's interesting to me is that this model does not seem to have been a huge success. I mean, no offense to the fans of Tunnels and Trolls, of whom I am one. Obviously, it continues to have a worldwide following, but I think we can say that, you know, it is hardly the cultural institution that the game it was intended to react against is, right? I don't think I'm overstepping the bounds by saying that. Tunnels and Trolls and games like it are predicated on the idea that people like simplicity. And they do. I like simplicity. I certainly do. But I've often thought that one of the reasons that Dungeons & Dragons and the Monster Manual in particular succeed is because of their complexity, or at least their diversity, their detail. You know, reducing all monsters to monster rating is a very efficient way to do things, and it means that it's the creativity that the GM puts into the creatures in the scenario that makes them memorable. At the same time, however, what it also means is that none of that is in the book. The depth and detail of the thing are not present in the book that you're reading when you are that kid, you know, who's been given this book for Christmas. Now, I find a lot to pore over in this book, absolutely, but I'm sure that I didn't pore over it in the way that someone who was, you know, 10 years old in 1977 pored over the Monster Manual, or someone who was 12 or 13, right? There's a complexity and a richness and a variety to the Monster Manual that's not present in a system that effectively abstracts all monsters to a single number, because Tunnels and Trolls is a system. It's not interested in presenting a world. And neither is D&D, right? But it's the way its systems are presented wind up creating an implied world. And interestingly, I think that's what people liked about it. So while in many ways Tunnels and Trolls has a lot of what I like in a game, and the simplicity and affordability of the paperback rulebook are a major point in its favor, particularly if you're a kid, right? I mean, this is pocket money reach. Like, I would have had to save my pocket money for a few weeks to achieve that amount of money at that age, but it was certainly not impossible. The arcane complexity of D&D, the fact that the main books were released over a period of 2 years, right? They're 77, 78, 79, aren't they? I mean, that seems very strange, but I almost feel like it was part of the appeal. You had to work at it. I mean, again, I'm guessing because this all occurred while I was an infant. But somehow, despite the wonderful presentation of Tunnels and Trolls, it's easy to read, conversational style, it's simple rules, it's emphasis on flexibility, and it's fantastic art, it's less compelling than AD&D. Again, that's unfair. It's actually an earlier text, right? It bears comparison more to something like Whitebox D&D, with which it shares a lot of its features. So maybe I should say that the Monster Manual and other first edition AD&D books present a refinement on the existing model of fantasy RPGs, and that's what's so interesting about them. Anyway, that's it for this special edition of Monster Man. I don't know what I hope to achieve with these things, other than maybe to start a discussion, you know, less talking about individual monsters and more about the ways in which these things are presented. Now, next time, we're going to be taking a look at something that takes exactly the opposite route, that mid-late 80s TSR attitude that wound up seeing everything gone into in painstaking detail, and we'll see how that compares to this very simple approach. And that's going to be next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the Deities and Demigods Advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.